This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's Tuesday, time to talk politics, and there are some big issues involving the military and national security. The Liberal government unveiled its new military spending plan, and the additional $8.1 billion over 5 years will not get us up to our NATO spending targets. And here's what got me about our underspending on the military. The Prime Minister is blaming the previous Harper government after nearly a decade in power.
I think it's important to remember where we started on this. When we took office in 2015, we had Canadian Armed Forces that had been significantly underinvested in by the previous government. The Conservatives actually had us down to 1% of GDP in 2014 and had for a few years.
Well, all parties do this. It's not just a Liberal thing, but seriously, after all this time in power, shouldn't there be a statute of limitations on the blame game? And we also had important revelations about foreign interference in our elections, with more to come. And Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre has been courting the Jewish community with fulsome support, the community here, and strong condemnations of Hamas. And I want to talk about the return of paper bags to the LCBO. Premier Doug Ford is talking about it. And of all things, it looks like it could become one of those perfect wedge issues. So we'll begin there. The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll-free 1-866-740-4740.
And now, the Recovering Politicians Panel.
And now I'd like to welcome George Smitherman, a former Ontario Liberal Deputy Premier and Health Minister, Sherry DeNovo, former Ontario NDP MPP, and Janet Ecker, former Ontario Finance Minister and PC MPP. Hello and welcome to you all. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Okay, I want to talk about paper bags at the LCBO. And, you know, this comes the last time I was in the grocery store, you know, a very condescending millennial cashier sort of looked at me and said, oh, well, don't you want any reusable bags? So sometimes I forget them at home. Sometimes I forget them in the car. There is a growing mountain in our home of reusable bags, and I have no doubt that most of them are going to end up in a landfill. So, you know, why is the opposition so upset about the return of paper bags at the LCBO? George.
Oh, I think people should be concerned because it's the kind of thing that the premier likes to tuck his interest into, but he can't keep emergency rooms open across the province. So I know it's got a populist appeal. He must have seen a bunch of letters come across or people mentioned to him, hey, what they were paper after all. What was the issue? So I'm sure that people are making light of it from the standpoint of beginning to wonder whether he's got the focus for the big issues that come across his desk.
Sherry, was it right for Merritt Stiles, the opposition leader, to go full on this, or should have she have just let it be? I mean, it is not the most critical issue facing us.
Certainly not. I mean, don't worry if you don't have a doctor. Don't worry if you can't afford rent. But hey, you can drown your sorrows in a bottle of vodka that you carry home in a paper bag. I mean, this is ludicrous, and this is a buck of beer. Remember that? still not a buck of beer. So, I mean, these are the kinds of silly, wedge issues that, we shouldn't be covering, quite frankly. What we should be covering is the crises that people are living in this province. And it's no joke that a lot of us don't have a doctor. doctor and that our emergency rooms are closing. This really affects, this is life and death. And paper bags, you know, whatever. I mean, yeah, and I kind of agree with you, Libby. I mean, there's a certain amount of greenwashing going on here, too, with reusable bags. So we end up with a closet full of them instead of plastic bags. But, you know, this
they don't recycle.
I know. And this is more of the same, though. I mean, come on.
Well, you know what? Those big issues, frankly, at least here on Fight Back, we talk about them constantly. But, you know, I just wonder if he didn't hit on something here, because judging by the reaction from Merritt Stiles, I mean, I resent when people make me feel like a terrible person for something like forgetting the reusable bag. I'm so sorry. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, and he may have hit on something. I don't know, maybe he forgot his reusable bag when he went to the liquor store. Janet.
God forbid a government should respond to issues that irritate taxpayers and consumers. I mean, really. You know, it's a small issue. Absolutely. Of course it is. But it's an everyday issue for a lot of people. And it's just underlining yet again that the premier does think about people's daily lives and what happens in them. The other thing is that, you know, governments can walk and chew gum at the same time, George and Sherry.
I'm not sure, but you go ahead. Yes.
Well, we just had the finance minister stand up and pledge millions of new dollars for doing precisely what Sherry and George talked about, connecting more people to primary health practitioners, nurse practitioners, doctors, because it is a need. There's no question it's a big need in this province, and the government is paying attention to that and talks about it. So, yes, the media all go with a flutter and a twitter about, you know, bags at the LCBO, but I got to tell you, there are a lot of people in lineups at the LCBO right now who are saying, thank you, Premier.
Thank you, Premier. Okay, let's move to more serious things. We have this new military policy and spending. It's not going to take us up to our NATO targets of 2%. NATO has said, oh, it's a start, we guess. And we have on the other side Donald Trump, if he gets in, saying he's not going to protect any allies who don't pony up the cash. So, again, I find it irritating when any politician who's been around for a long time starts blaming the previous government, George.
Yes. I think that long lead time items are a particular challenge for our political environment. So when I look at that list, I wish that I could have be booked in for your show 20 years from today, where we could all go back and say, well, that was what they laid out. What actually happened? Because you can't even get government to stay attuned to commitments for pandemic planning, because as soon as the window of horizon allows people to forget about something, they move on to another. I'm really suspicious of any long-term number of it. Estimating the procurement price of a piece of military apparatus for 10 or 15 years from now, good luck on all of that. I think what the more important aspects of it are, what is in the shorter-term spending plan? And I think the big issue here is that, you know, if Trump is successful, and there's a good prospect that he will be, I think Canada's going to be in the crosshairs of that call for the 2%. So I'm evaluating it mostly from that standpoint, and I'll be looking to see how that stands out in the upcoming budget, and very, very mindful of the risks that we face in a certain sense by, you know, underfunding the military culturally over governments, and for a long time, I'd have to say.
Yeah, Sherry, I mean, you know, NATO's in the crosshair if Trump gets in, and we have chronically underfunded the military, and we have huge trouble recruiting people. We don't treat them that well. And, you know, when push comes to shove, all those other things you were mentioning, like healthcare, you know, that's a little more immediate to people. So how do we get around this?
Well, I'm sort of with George. I mean, this is a kind of a wish list, but at the end of the day, you know, what's really affecting Canadians and what's going to, you know, affect their vote when it comes down to it, I think for most Canadians is not going to be how much is spent on the military. It's going to be, you know, can I afford my mortgage? Is there a job for my kids, or are they going to live in the basement forever? I mean, I think that's what, you know, most folk are really concerned about. And I think the average Canadian is really suffering economically right now. So, this is probably, I mean, yes, it's better than Harper, and I agree with you, Libby. I mean, come on. I mean, they've been in government forever, and the same thing you can say about the Conservatives provincially, of course, here now, too. But, at the end of the day, it's going to be bread and butter, meat and potatoes issues. It's the economy and how it affects us personally that's going to, you know, count at the ballot box.
Janet, people are not talking that much about the foreign interference inquiry, and there are all kinds of revelations. And we heard from the former Conservative leader saying people were not warned about this, even though the government knew.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's disgraceful. But I think on the defense spending, it is just so typical of the approach that the current prime minister and his government takes to issues. They don't do anything about it unless it falls into their favored, you know, virtue signaling topics until it becomes a political liability. So, let's make a big splashy announcement. The government that brought us ArriveCan and the Phoenix Pay system are now going to roll out a multi-billion dollar defense program over 20 years.
Oh, Phoenix Pay started under Harper.
Well, I know. All right. But what did they do to fix it? I mean, you know, there is a government bureaucracy there that can be just as challenging for whoever's there. But the last time I checked, Stephen Harper and his record hasn't been on the ballot for over, you know, for a lot of years. So right now it's about Justin Trudeau and his record and what he's doing about it. And, you know, when you stand up and blame, as you say, you stand up, oh, well, it's the other guy's fault. That may work for the first year, 2 years, whatever. But excuse me, people voted for him to fix all of that. So let's stop with the carping and the whining and the blaming the other guy, and let's look at fixing it. And this is not going to fix it. I mean, this is just going to prove, I mean, George is absolutely right. This is going to prove to be another great, wonderful federal government boondoggle. And Trump, if he wins, God help us. I mean, he's going to eat us for breakfast. The other thing that I think is important about this is that you're absolutely right that, you know, Canadians on a day-to-day basis are worried about, you know, lots of different issues, and defense is not one of them. But the environment out there is a lot different, and Canadians are seeing that. I mean, I don't think this federal government would have bothered to do any kind of announcement if they weren't seeing that Canadians were worried about our status these days and our defense these days, you know, in a very, very uncertain world. So it may not be something that we're thinking about when we trot off to the grocery store or the liquor store during the week, but it certainly is something that when people watch the news at night, they worry about it, and they should worry about it, because the country is in serious trouble in lots of issues. This is one of them. Our allies just are scratching their heads about what to do with this. We're going to have a target on our back, if I can use that analogy, if Trump gets elected.
Okay, well, Tom in Ajax, let's take a call from you. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Libby. I'm just leaving the beautiful downtown Whitby, where a fair-sized protest just rolled through there on the main street. About 30 tractor, farm tractors, cars, tractor trailers, trucks, and people on the sidewalk with the mandatory F. Trudeau flag. And they're heading to Mark Holland's office in Ajax to join up with a bunch of other vehicles of the same. And then they're going to another MP's office in Pickering after that.
And they are protesting what?
The carbon tax.
The carbon tax. And yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's something they feel strongly about, I guess, and the carbon tax is turning out to be somewhat of a pig in a poke, to use my old Irish grandfather's expression for something about nothing. And, it's gathering quite a bit of attention, and apparently, it spoke to one of the people on the sidewalk, and they're expecting a whole bunch more people at Mark Holland's office in Ajax later, about half an hour or so.
Okay, well, thank you for serving as our eyes and ears on the ground there. Tom, thanks for your call. So speaking of the carbon tax kicked in April the 1st. What was that? A little over a week ago. Meanwhile, the government is sprinkling billions and billions of dollars ahead of the budget that's coming down a week today. So, George, how do you think it's being received?
I don't know exactly, but I do think that the government's approach of giving up on secrecy and pre-launching initiatives that are in the budget is better than their previous approaches, I'd say. Janice had her own experiences with this. It's increasingly difficult to own the news cycle after a budget for more than like even half of a day. So using one-off initiatives to inform the storyline, I think it's a lot smarter. I'm sure they had lots of resources and polling to take a look at how to do it, but just looking at that food program, which is something that I think is very, very worthwhile, that got a tremendous amount of one-off attention that if you just had that as one of several things in the budget, might have been lost. So I think as a communications approach, it is one of the powers that the government has, and I think that they're using it better than they have in past budget cycles.
Sherry, it looks and feels an awful lot like an election campaign, I've got to say.
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen this before. I mean, this is classic Liberals has promised everything before an election, and then maybe we'll get some of it. But to George's point, I think there is some wisdom. It has affected the polling numbers somewhat. And I think the billions for housing is absolutely a good move and critical. I mean, you can't have it both ways. The provinces can't say we're in charge of housing, sorry, not you. And also, by the way, we need your billions now. So, So I think he's kind of, you know, that's kind of poking the bear there to our conservative provincial leaders in terms of the housing crisis that we have in this country. We'll see how it plays out. I don't think it's going to save them.
You know, you're talking about the strategy as opposed to the secrecy. I hate to date myself, but I was in Ottawa. Remember that year when the bureau chief of Global, Doug, I forgot his last name, it's been so long, found a copy or got a copy of the budget from the printer, and it was a national scandal, and there were practically charges relating to it, and the government had to release the budget immediately. It was really quite something, and this is definitely a very different approach, Janet.
Yeah, well, a couple things. First of all, budget secrecy can be important because you don't want to have advanced information leaking out so that some people can trade on it, make money off it, and others can't. I mean, that's where it comes from. And that's, I think, while there's a lot of leeway in terms of what you can announce and not announce that isn't going to be moving markets, there are some things that you need to be careful with. So I think, hey, secrecy, more secrecy. I think what's important is that the principle is protected, but that gives, you know, a government a lot of leeway. And this government needs to do something politically. I agree with Sherry. It's not going to save them, but you can certainly see how worried they are with this particular sort of pre-election, showering money trip that he's taking across the country. I've got to tell you, if I was Minister Freeland, my nose would really be out of joint because she's the finance minister and she's been sort of standing there behind them, you know, sort of in a, you know, nodding politely. It's an awful thing to do to your finance minister. But the other reason why this particular approach with this much out there, the way they're doing it, is it makes it extremely difficult for people to figure out, well, what have they taken from somewhere else to put the money here? Or how are they expecting to pay for this? Or, you know, like, I mean,
not anytime soon. That's the answer.
That's true. But there, like, there's no way for people to judge. And that's the downfall, the downside. You know, the transparency and the accountability is sadly lacking when you do this big headline kind of announcement. So, again, a clever political tactic. We'll see what happens.
Well, they also seem to be getting into more trouble because some of these billions are getting into areas of provincial responsibility. I hate getting into the weeds on this stuff, but you've got premiers screaming and they don't have agreements to be able to implement it. Maybe that's the way they delay paying for it, George.
Well, you know, I think on some of these things, actually, the government found their own backbone and decided that they were going to stick up for themselves, both around defending their policies with respect to the carbon tax. Difficult as it is, they still found their voice and realized, hey, we can put some of these provinces on the spot. They don't all make sense when they start talking more. They've done the same thing on housing. I think the point was already made. Like, it's one thing to say there's a crisis and then for a province to say, well, we don't need your money with these conditions. Well, you know, if they're going to, this brings to the fore issues like in Ontario, threeplex versus fourplex, what have you. So to me, these are all symbols or signals of some kind of activist communication orientation change within the government. It may not save them. They're still struggling, et cetera, et cetera. But I think they're at least showing more life and spirit for their own initiatives, et cetera. And I think that housing play where several provinces were, well, we don't want your $5 or $6 billion with those conditions attached, that's not strong argument. And I think that it's a benefit of the policy change or communications tactics that the Libs seem to have taken.
Janet, this weekend, Pierre Poilievre was in Toronto, definitely courting the Jewish community, expressing a lot of support for the community, which has been the victim of a lot of hate crimes, condemning Hamas, and very, very forcefully, and that's in strong contrast to the Liberal government. And a lot of people think the Liberals are just playing to a larger Muslim community. So what do you think of Poilievre's stand, and do you think it's smart politically?
Well, you know, there are times when people have moral values and moral certainty and clarity on principles, and I think what you're seeing from Poilievre is precisely that. There's no question there's a political trade-off. He's prepared to make it for his moral principles. The Prime Minister is not, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And Sherry, what do you make of it?
I think that's what he's doing, but I think it's not anti-Semitic to be anti-Netanyahu. I mean, the world has spoken really quite forcefully on this, I think. 14,000...
A lot of Israelis are anti-Netanyahu, but that shouldn't spark hate crimes.
Exactly. Exactly. And his policies are not making them safer. And I think that's the conversation that needs to be had. And absolutely. I mean, this should never result in, you know, any communities, especially Jewish communities in our city, to be under threat. But you still can have the conversation. This is a situation that's ongoing. It's not getting any better. And ultimately, you know, the beginning of the Gaza siege was, you know, most Palestinians weren't in favor of Hamas, and now most Gazans are. And that's a poll that should terrify those who are concerned about terrorism.
After the next break or the first break, we are going to be talking about Crime Stoppers launch of an anti-hate crime awareness. We've just got a huge increase in hate crimes against a number of groups, mostly anti-Semitic hate crimes, but a number of groups, lawlessness pervading. And we also had this yesterday. I was talking to the head of the police association, who's very upset that two members of the police services board came out with this letter arguing with the way the police handled the protesters and made some arrests because of violence. George, your take on all of that?
Well, my take on all of it is that notwithstanding the high moral plane that Janet has ascribed to Polyev, I'm pretty sure the fact that in one of Toronto's three Jewish bellwether ridings, if I could say it like that, where there's a significant proportion of Jewish voters, we're going to have a by-election. And I'm pretty sure that's also factoring in somewhat to the focus on this. That having said, I come from the queer community, and really to have known so many people that have been subjected to the traumatizing effect of hatred and the like is so much of a concern to me, and the rise in these statistics is frightening and disheartening. So I think, you know, we all have to redouble our efforts to try and create civil construct around, you know, what are obviously very difficult emotional issues for people, but it's really frightening.
Well, yeah, and as I said, we are going to be talking about this new anti-hate crime awareness, and the queer community, the LGBTQ plus community are the number two target of hate crimes, and it's when it happens to you, it is really devastating. I'm looking at the clock. We have very little time left, so I'm going to give everybody 20 seconds what they can say about the budget a week today, but not before we are on the air here. Starting with Sherry, what are you expecting anything that we don't know about?
No, I think he's made all the announcements, right? I mean, there are not a lot of surprises here. He's going to be grilled on how he pays for it. He's not going to have all the answers. And as I said before, this will not save them.
George?
You know, I'm cynical about calling two indications a single-payer pharmacare system. We've talked about that a few months ago, a month or two ago. And I'm mostly looking to see how much of the word pharmacare have they actually paid for there. Because they don't really like heightening expectations to Canadians, many of whom are facing barriers to access to pharmacare, when we're really talking about a focus on two indications, noteworthy as those ones are. So that's something like, I'm looking for where are the real dollars and how much of that word pharmacare did you actually pay for?
Okay, Janet Ecker, last 20 seconds to you.
Well, I feel sorry for Minister Freeland because I think she's going to stand up and say, well, here are the financial reports. Thank you very much.
One female finance minister to another.
Yeah, that's right. There's not much left to say. But I think seriously, I think those people who care about this country's financial situation are growing increasingly worried, and I think this budget is not going to do anything to ease their concerns, unfortunately.
Okay. On that note, we wrap things up. Thank you so much, Janet Ecker, George Smitherman, and Sherry DeNovo. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. We are taking a short break, and when we come back, as promised, hot off the announcement, Crime Stoppers is starting in conjunction with the police, an anti-hate crime awareness campaign. We'll talk about that when we return.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. This morning, Crime Stoppers launched a hate crime awareness campaign. It comes amid an alarming increase in hate crime since October the 7th. Since then, police have responded to 941 hate crime calls and 216 hate crime occurrences that resulted in 72 arrests and 182 charges. Now, most of these incidents are motivated by anti-Semitism targeting Jews. The next biggest targets are members of the LGBTQ plus communities, followed by anti-Black hate crimes. And despite the staggering increase in the numbers, authorities worry that hate crimes are actually under report it. 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-744-740. Do you think this is the right approach? Do you think this is going to help? And right now, let's go to Mark Cousins, and he is the vice chair of Toronto Crime Stoppers. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Libby. How are you today?
I'm fine. Why did you decide to take this approach to launch a Crime Stoppers awareness campaign?
Well, at Toronto Crime Stoppers, we're always aware of what's going on in the community and figuring out how we can help keep the community safe by making sure everybody knows we're a conduit for anonymous reporting. And so you may have seen prior campaigns like Auto Theft Campaign, Organized Retail Crime Campaign, which was all recently in the headlines. As you just mentioned, hate crimes is on the rise. Police are stating they believe it's underreported. So we felt it was important for Toronto Crime Stoppers to get out in front of this and remind the community that reporting crime is important and that there's a way to do it anonymously, and that's Toronto Crime Stoppers.
And why do you think the ability to report these things anonymously will help?
Well, I just think it's another conduit for folks who maybe don't want to speak to the police or don't trust the police or, frankly, just don't even want to be identified as being involved with that type of reporting. So we always encourage everyone to call 911 if it's an emergency. But if it's something that you know and you want to report it anonymously, that's what we're here for.
Okay. Just as a point of clarification, I talked about these numbers that we heard at your news conference. What's the difference between a hate crime call and a hate crime occurrence?
Well, that would be a question for the police, as they're the ones that categorize those things. But anyone who thinks they've witnessed a hate crime that wants to report it, anonymously, again, can use Crime Stoppers. They can call the police if they want to report it through normal channels. But a hate crime occurrence and a hate crime call really doesn't make any difference to Toronto Crime Stoppers. We just want the information so that we can help keep the community safe.
And have you had any of these before making the announcement of this campaign?
Well, we receive a lot of tips every year, over 7,000 tips and 15,000 follow-ups last year. So I can tell you that hate crimes has been reported in the past, along with every other crime you can think of.
And oftentimes, Crime Stoppers' success with, general crime is because there is a reward attached, but obviously that's not the case here.
Yeah, no, in 2020, Toronto Crime Stoppers stopped the reward program. And the reason we did that was we found that looking over the last 10 years prior to that, only 17% of tipsters picked up tips. And 50% of the tipsters were clicking no for the online for do they want a reward. And so we realized that we were putting money aside that really wasn't going back into the community in any way, shape, or form. In fact, we were paying about an average of $8,500. So we came up with a community rewards program where we put the money directly back into the community through any number of ways. I mean, we've done playgrounds, we've done parquettes, we've cleaned those up. And last year we spent $30,000 back into the community. So we feel this is a better way to get the money back into the community that we raise. And we realize that people are really calling in because doing the right thing is its own reward.
Do you have any kind of a target? I mean, the police have said they believe hate crimes are underreported. So do you have any kind of target at what you expect to see or to hear with this program?
No, we really don't know. The whole purpose of today's hate crimes weigh heavily on the entire community theme is merely to make sure that folks are aware we exist and that this is another area in which they can use us.
Okay. Anything else you want to leave us with?
No. We appreciate your time, and we are open 24/7 to receive tips. So we're happy to take any calls.
And you just want to give us the phone number again?
Sure. The phone number is 1-800-222-222. 8477 or online at 222tips.com.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Okay. We are taking another break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about another crime that's seeing a big, huge increase. That, of course, is auto theft, often violent carjackings and home invasions related to auto theft. There was a bit of progress. We're going to talk to Mayor Patrick Brown of Brampton about his take on where we are at with all of that. And again, want to hear from you. What's your take on this? Certainly, if you've had your car stolen, if you've witnessed any of these things, you know, we saw some video last week that was just beyond scary of people breaking into a home to get the keys to the car. And the numbers to call again. 416-360-0740, toll-free 1-866-740-4740. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to 1. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Well, there has been some progress in combating the huge increase in violent car theft. Project Vector saw hundreds of stolen vehicles seized by the OPP and other Canadian authorities. But has enough been done? And what is your experience? And are you worried about this? You know, some of the reports and the video we've seen about some of these incidents are truly shocking and frightening. The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. And I'm now joined by Patrick Brown, the mayor of Brampton. Hi, Patrick. How are you?
Afternoon. Great to be back on your show.
Great to have you here. So what do you make of the progress that has been made so far?
Well, first of all, auto theft has skyrocketed across Ontario and Quebec, and it's harrowing. And so when I look at progress, I actually see a lack of progress. It's becoming more brazen. People are knocking down doors. We see violent carjackings because it's so lucrative. Every year, the amount of money that is retrieved by organized crime from auto theft has increased. The 22 numbers were $1.2 billion. This is the biggest gift you could imagine in Canadian history to organized crime. I know there was a lot of media coverage of Project Vector, and for me, Project Vector shows you what's possible. They let police visit the Port of Montreal, and that included Toronto Police and the Peel Police, and they were allowed to look at 390 shipping containers. And they managed to get back 598 stolen cars. And everyone was clapping and giving each other accolades. But my point to the federal government is, listen to the police. The Port of Montreal is the problem. And if they can get this many from 390 shipping containers, if you really want to cut off auto theft in Canada, there is 2 million shipping containers that go through the Port of Montreal a year. 80% of stolen cars go through the Port of Montreal. This is the leak in the bucket. This is what needs to be fixed.
What about, I was hearing that until now, you don't need a security clearance to get a job at the Port of Montreal. I mean, it seems pretty obvious that these are inside jobs. Is there any real progress on that, and will it stop bad guys from getting in there?
Well, you know, the contrast I use is you look at how Canada governs our ports and how other countries do. In the U.S., 45% of shipping containers are screened. In Canada, it's less than 1%. We have an honor system where you simply have to fill out a form promising there's no stolen goods. You know, for goods coming into Canada, they check for criminal activity. But for outgoing, for some reason, we have this honor system where we trust people are not doing bad things. That isn't working. Obviously, this has become a flourishing criminal enterprise. And, you know, I know there is reticence. There is pushback from the Port of Montreal for having to have these additional security measures. But it's necessary. You know, like our deputy chief in Peel Region, who's an expert in auto theft, you know, the way he put it to me is, he says, I'm not making friends at the Port of Montreal. They asked me to leave. But this is the root of the problem. And because ports are under federal jurisdiction and railways are under federal jurisdiction, local police have no jurisdiction. They're not allowed on unless they're given permission or they get a warrant. And by the time they get a warrant, the car is long gone.
So, again, this for Project Vector, which authority was it from the federal government that allowed these police forces to go in?
So CBSA did a partnership. Because we've been saying we need to have access to the Port of Montreal. This is where our tracking shows all the stolen cars. 80% of stolen cars are going to the Port of Montreal. And so they gave permission for these local police forces, the OPP Joint Task Force on Stolen Vehicles, the Peel Police, Toronto Police, Montreal Police, they gave them temporary access to the Port of Montreal to look at 390 shipping containers. But there's 2 million. So my point is, you know, yes, I applaud them for giving us temporary access, but you can't say we're going to catch criminals on Monday and then the next 6 days of the week let the criminals get away with their activity. If you really want to fix this, it can't be a one-time project. Let's fix the structural problem we have in Canada, which is at the Port of Montreal. Call a spade a spade. You know, there's criminal activity happening there every day of the week, and it needs to be shut down.
And how to do that?
It's simple. Scanners are $3.5 million each. We need 4 scanners at the Port of Montreal. We need them to be staffed so we can actually make sure that we do in Canada what they do in other countries and make sure that stolen goods are not leaving our country.
And is there any progress on that? And even if they were ordered tomorrow, how long would it take for them to arrive? Where do they come from?
So, yes, progress. The old public safety minister I met with 2 years ago about this, and he said to me, Patrick, we're focused on guns. This is not a priority right now. Well, the new public safety minister has taken a different approach. He understands that this is their headache, their problem they need to fix. Dominic LeBlanc has been, you know, he's been on the phone with me. He's being collaborative. He's saying all the right things, and he announced that they're going to fund scanners at the Port of Montreal over the next 3 years. My problem is I appreciate that they're finally at the table and they're going to buy these scanners. The position that our police have taken and the position that I, you know, completely concur with them on is that we can't wait 3 years. We want to see these scanners. We want to see that RFP start immediately. We want to see these. Our request in February at the Auto Theft Summit was that we want to see these scanners put in by Q2 of this year. So no later than June. We need to protect our ports. We need to protect our border security. Otherwise, this is going to continue to be the greatest gift in Canadian history to organized crime.
You know, over the past couple of weeks, we've seen billions and billions and billions of dollars sprinkled around that are going to be confirmed, presumably, in the budget a week today. Do you think there might be a few million for scanners in there or not?
There better be. Otherwise, you know, it's a glaring dropping of the ball when it comes to public safety in Canada. This is not expensive. 4 scanners at $3.5 million each at the Port of Montreal. We have 2 intermodal hubs, which are rail lines in the GTA that are being used for stolen cars. We need 1 scanner at each of them. Literally 6 scanners. We're looking in the range of $20 million, $25 million to get this done, to shut down and put the brakes on auto thefts in Canada. So if they don't step up, I'll be very disappointed.
And you think that if they moved on it, we could get these by June?
We could. And by the way, this isn't the recommendation that I'm giving as Mayor of Brampton. This is all the top police leadership in the country saying this is what they need. This is what the OPP commissioner said. This is what the chiefs in Toronto and Hamilton and Peel and York Region, this is what they've all asked for. And so when you have a unified position of the best and most talented police leadership in the country speaking in unison of what is blatantly needed, the federal government better listen.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to take a call from Daryl in Uxbridge. Hello, Daryl.
Libby, it's Bill in Uxbridge. What I wanted to ask is somebody owns these shipping containers and is getting income from making them available to ship left-handed screwdrivers or kumquats. Is there not a paper trail on all this? Who's paying CN to get the shipping container to Montreal? Who's paying to get that shipping container loaded onto a boat and shipped out? There's got to be a paper trail. Where is it?
And so what happens commonly is, you know, police have traced this all back to organized crime, but it tends to be dummy companies set up. So it's really easy to set up a corporation. And so the paper trail is difficult to block. You know, they can track it back after the fact, but when you have new companies sprung up regularly in Canada, it is difficult to prevent unless you actually have the ability to scan. And so never underestimate how sophisticated and agile that organized crime can be. And they have found a very lucrative way to make billions in Canada.
Well, it seems to me the whole fault is we rely too much on computers to monitor this stuff. Let's get hands-on and get these guys off our streets and into the jails.
Okay, thanks, Bill, for your call. Very good questions. I want to talk about the other end of it a bit, Patrick. And before we do that, let me give the numbers out again. We have a few more minutes talking about auto theft in the past. You know, the phones have gone off the hook with people really scared or having stories of their own to share. 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. I am talking to Brampton Mayor Patrick Brown about auto theft and what we can do about it, what we have done about it, and what we should be doing about it. And I want to talk about the thefts themselves. I'm sure, Mayor, that you saw this incredibly scary video of a couple of bad guys literally breaking into the house, coming there with a brick in the night to get the keys and just yelling, "Give us the keys." And the owner sort of said, "Get out of my house," which I don't know if that's the right response. But a lot of these, what I'm told, a lot of these people are young and there's not much consequence for them because they are perhaps underage. Do you agree with that analysis?
Yeah, we did see that reported from police, is that organized crime, you know, has a number of different steps when they steal a car. And for the initial theft, they will hire young offenders. And so they will pay kids to steal the car, knowing that the criminal consequences are not as significant. And so quite often you'll see a young offender steal the car. And even if they get caught, the best you're going to see them spend is one night in custody. You know, we actually had a case in Peel that I couldn't believe. Someone was given bail for an auto theft, got released on bail, went out into the parking lot and stole another car.
I'm sorry, it's not funny. It's just funny. Sorry about that.
So you can see why I'm frustrated when I see the answers staring in front of us and I see a lack of action. And I've sort of been spending the last 2 years screaming at the federal government to listen to our police leadership to get this fixed, because we can do it. We can fix this. Other countries have. There's no reason we can't in Canada.
Well, back to the problem of these young offenders, should the penalties be, you know, should they be increased? I mean, we have a problem with the so-called catch and release of all kinds of criminals who often go out and reoffend.
Mm-hmm. So I think the number one thing is to take the money away from organized crime. Right now, this is in the range of $1 to $2 billion a year for organized crime. And so when a young offender gets caught, you know, what we hear commonly is, you know, that young offender will be paid maybe $5,000 to steal the car. If they spend a night in jail, they'll get sort of $10,000 for every night they spend in jail. And so there's so much money at stake. They're able to lure vulnerable communities and vulnerable youth into this world of crime. And so I think if we cut the money off, that changes the game. If they no longer have the ability to export this product and sell it abroad, that changes the game. Certainly we can look at sentencing, and you know, if you're working with organized crime, it should be a more significant sentence. If you're part of an auto theft syndicate, even if you're a young offender, it needs to be more than a slap on the wrist. I wholeheartedly support that, but I really believe we need to focus our attention on cutting the money off, because the money is so lucrative. If the money wasn't so lucrative, you wouldn't see them getting as brazen. The fact that they're literally breaking doors down and doing violent carjacking speaks to how much is at stake.
And again, just to make the time in jail longer or the bail higher or anything like that, is that something that can be done easily, or do you need who else do you need to come on board with that?
Well, the criminal code is a federal document, and so that's set by the House of Commons. That would be the Justice Minister that would table any amendments to the criminal code. In terms of justices of the peace that are granting bail and why that threshold should be higher, I think it would be a combination of one. Obviously, we have a Young Offenders Act that is also a federal document, but, you know, justices of the peace are appointed provincially. And so, you know, when the Premier made the controversial statement that he wants to see justices of the peace that support law and order and public safety, you know, there is, you know, merit to what he was saying. You know, I want to see justices of the peace who are going to say no. I hear too many stories. You know, I had one case in Brampton, the Henderson-Bellman tragedy, where someone was released on bail five times before taking the life of his former intimate partner. And so, how does someone get released on bail five times? Now, there's something broken with our bail system in Canada.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that there is something broken with our bail system in Canada. And these things, I mean, they're just so violent and so shocking and there's also this issue about the increase in insurance costs. And there is a problem in Brampton complaining about, you know, geographic insurance. And now you have this, you have a lot of this crime in Brampton, and you have the insurance companies saying, putting it on the car owner to have all these anti-theft devices.
Yeah, and these are all band-aid solutions, all these anti-theft devices. Organized crime will find a way around every new device. Once again, it goes back to the fact, if there's so much money at stake, they will put the time and energy and technology into finding a way around. But if you cut the money off, you're cutting the legs off from the beast. And that's what, you know, I've been spending my time focused on, trying to build political support. It's why I went to the Port of Montreal. It's why I went to Ottawa for the Auto Theft Summit, to really make the pitch that we can solve this. And we can do it in a manner that doesn't disrupt our supply chain. It doesn't cost a lot of money. This is achievable. And I just hope that the government of Canada sees the urgency of this. This is not something we can wait 3 years on. The urgency is now.
And what do you have planned in this campaign further before we let you go?
Well, believe it or not, because this is such a hot topic in the GTA, I've reached out to the other mayors in the GTA and asked them if they would join me on a tour of the Port of Montreal. And I would say that the response has been very positive, because whether you're the mayor in Vaughan or Toronto or in Durham, you're hearing the same concerns from your constituents. And I think the more attention we can bring to this glaring weakness in public safety, the more momentum it will give to the federal government to get these scanners put in place and to staff them. So don't be surprised if you see a bunch of mayors from the GTA on a tour of the Port of Montreal to see where all the stolen cars have gone.
Okay, and we'll be looking at the budget next week to see if those scanners are in there. In the meantime, thank you so much, Mayor Patrick Brown. Bye-bye.
My pleasure.
Okay, that is all the time we have for today.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.